The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to legendary investor Gervase Williams of Premier Miton. So welcome back, Gervase.
It's a real pleasure to be here, Paul.
Yeah, well, we had a bit of a hangover in January, actually, after a really strong pre-Christmas sort of Santa rally. So sort of putting that together, what's your sort of outlook for equities for the rest of 2024, particularly your sort of sweet spot of small and mid-caps?
I mean, economic growth has actually, you know, been much more stable than people thought. I mean, if we were beginning of last year, we were expecting a recession. And the key issue is, you know, the world didn't have a recession. In fact, if anything, the US actually accelerated in the second half. So it's been a very kind of sort of good period in terms of economics. And perhaps because of that, that's meant that actually people have been making good money in the mainstream companies. If you take the largest seven, the Magnificent Seven, as they're called in the US, according to Bloomberg, they rose 107% last year. 107%. They were big to start with, right?
I thought elephants aren't supposed to gallop.
Gazillions of money has been made on these stocks. And of course, as you know, they've had a good day, a couple of days recently. So coming back to it, in a way, small caps have been in the shadows and they're still in the shadows. Yes, we did see a tiny pickup at the end of last year. If anything, there's been a slight slippage this year. But certainly valuations are sensational. And specifically, the small cap effect will come back. It hasn't come back in any meaningful size yet, but it will. And when it comes back, it'll be here for quite a long period. So I remain very upbeat. I think the valuations are attractive. I think the opportunity for them to grow when the world's not growing is there. Specifically, they have lots of upside potential. It's the option side, the option value of these things. They don't just kind of go up 30 or 50%. Some of the successful small caps can go up 3, 5, 10 times sometimes. And that's very overlooked at the moment.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, this is a great opportunity for sort of just mean reversion, I think, just to sort of like get back to a semblance of valuation. In fact, I was looking at sort of like the sort of just the S&P 500, never mind the Mag 7. If you did a PEG ratio in the US, it's about 1.8. In fact, in the UK, because it's a lower growth rate, it's 1.7 PEG ratio. But in small caps, it's only 0.8. So it's less than half. It's just frighteningly cheap, given the growth and the valuation.
And actually, I mean, unfortunately, it's quite difficult for companies in concern because they're standing on low valuations. They've been on low valuations for a while now. The UK itself is on a low valuation. And so it's a little bit sort of, you know, they say, well, I'm going through the cost and all the hassle of being a quoted company. And I'm not sure at the moment it's easy for them to raise capital at attractive rates. And that's holding back their CapEx going forward. So that's also something we need to worry about.
Yeah. Well, what about the sort of M&A surge we've recently had? I mean, it's been incredible over the last 3 months. In fact, we had one, I think, in your portfolio last week, DX Group, the logistics guys who got taken out. And we've had one this morning. But we've probably had about sort of like 30 or 40 in the past two or three months. And I did see some analysis saying the premium paid, you know, from the preceding day in 2023 was 50% last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, we had SDM, of course, which was taken over at 150% premium, and I still felt it was a disappointing premium, right? Because it was standing at net cash beforehand. Okay, it's nice to get more money, and we can invest it back into other companies which are overlooked and such like. But if anything, we're strongly suggesting our client companies don't get taken over. If they do approach us and say, you know, would you like to sign an irrevocable and such like? At the moment, the answer is no, not really, because although, yes, it's great to get the uplift, it's great to get the cash in, it's good for the sector to have some cash coming back in against some of the redemptions last year. But most particularly, really, the greater upside is actually if you can remain quote in these quoted companies with that option value upside coming through as they succeed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even though we've had some difficult times, your portfolio has done pretty well. Let's start off with some sort of like challenger brands in the utility sector. We've had U Group, which has done phenomenal over the last 2 years. It's a sort of an independent supplier to small businesses of gas and electricity, and also is rolling out sort of smart meters. I mean, the shares have done really, really well. What's your sort of latest on this one? I mean, it's competing against obviously the big four. And it's a bit of a David versus Goliath, but it's winning. David is winning.
Well, I mean, the key isn't just about the quality of the company. It's actually a quality of customer service. As you know, we're really very interested in good customer service. it means you can not just hold on to your customers, but actually you win more. And they've been taking market share. So market cap's about 185 at the moment. Now, if you were looking 3 years ago, this was 18 market cap. So it's come up an awfully long way. You know, the share price is literally 10 times better than it was, you know, 3 years ago. But most particularly, you know, here's a company which, according to Liberum, which are the brokers, will have 54 million of cash, no debt, at the end of the year just finished. And if they're correct about the future, and obviously I'd like them to exceed these forecasts, but just assuming that these forecasts are what they achieve this coming year, they've just started 79 million of cash at the end of this year, 106 million next year. So coming back to it, you know, this is a business. It's a big business. It does 400 million of sales, right? It just got down to a ludicrous valuation. Now, there are lots of others which are in a similar kind of position. But the net effect is not so much that they have upside, not just that, you know, they succeed, but when they go up 10 times, they're still standing on a low valuation. According to Liberum, this is on an 8 times PE ratio, even though it's got about a third of its market cap in cash at the end of this coming year. So it's kind of ridiculous, really. But it does underline the option value you get in these kind of quoted companies.
Yeah, over £3 per share of cash just says everything, doesn't it? I mean, gives them a lot of chance. I mean, if they want to sort of, you know, consolidate the sector, then that gives them a chance. Another one in that sort of like, you know, challenger brands, but in the more consumer area is Good Energy, which again has really sort of like blazed a sort of trail over the last sort of 6 months. It's just sort of taken off. It supplies sort of like a more greener sort of like renewable energy to consumers, but also smart meters. And presumably it's going to be helping out with, you know, feed-in tariffs and all that kind of stuff. What do you see latest on this one? Because, again, it just took off about 6 months ago.
Well, exactly. I mean, again, the valuation was standing at, you know, not far off net cash, you know, 6 months ago. Obviously, it's come up now. It's about 60 million market cap. Net cash about 25 at the moment. But what I would say is, most particularly, it's growing well. So although it's on a 17 times P ratio, which isn't disgustingly cheap, you know, if you look at the current year just started, it's 11, dropping to 7 the following year. And we've got, again, that kind of option value upside. Yes, they can invest and take on more customers and the feed-in tariffs and all the rest of it. But they've got the Zapmap as well, which they've got a 50% shareholding in, which has been growing very rapidly, about 45% growth last year. So specifically, it's not just where they are now. It's the momentum, the opportunity, particularly they could sell in due course, perhaps Zapmap. Someone will acquire it in due course, or indeed, maybe they'll be able to expand by taking over distressed acquisitions at low valuations, putting that cash to work, creating greater earnings, and ultimately driving something where the earnings growth exceeds forecasts. So again, as a 62 million market cap company, it's a company where a lot of institutions don't do a lot of work. They're not prepared to necessarily look at it. But as it gets bigger, like U Group, gets up to sort of 180, 200 million market cap, then further investors will come and have a look at it, professional investors, and that can then boost the valuation even further from there.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, when you sort of look at the balance sheet and it's got 18 million of cash, which is roughly around about £1 a share, and if you strip that out and just look at it on an EBIT multiple, you only get sort of like still sort of like 7 times EBIT multiple. So if you strip out that cash, then it's definitely cheap. Just one thing I haven't seen out the broker notes, and I don't know whether you could sort of like cast any, you know, sort of like spotlight on it, because I haven't seen a number. Do you know what the, I mean, what is the sort of indicative value for Zapmap? I mean, is anybody?
Yeah, I agree.
It's a difficult one to value, isn't it?
Yeah, they haven't put a valuation on it, to be fair. But the main thing is it does have a big market position in terms of, you know, when you get an electric car, you do want to know where these places are to charge it. And actually, increasingly now, people are using their own chargers and putting them on the map, so that if you want to use someone's home charger, can use that as well. So that's a new source of revenue. And specifically, you know, there are going to be a shortage of chargers in due course. So again, I think Zapmap will have value. You know, how many millions it'll be worth? I don't know. I think obviously more than current valuation, but, you know, we'll soon see. They have raised capital recently, so I suppose that does give you a valuation to some degree.
Okay, good. All right. Well, let's move on to sort of like building products. We've got Lords Group Trading, which is, I think it's got a trading update later on this week. It's Wednesday, I think they're planning it. It trades at about 7 times PE, and Travis Perkins, who is obviously its bigger rival, came out with a reassuring, stable sort of like industry trading update on Thursday. Its shares went up sort of 6%, and it trades on 13 to 14 times PE. But they're pretty much identical type of businesses, other than the Lloyds, you know, Lords has been more entrepreneurial and growing faster. What gives? What I don't understand is it just because it's a small cap and it just been ignored?
I think small cap is part of it. I mean, it does do 450 million in sales, so it is a big business. I think the area where the share price fell was actually very much due to boiler components that they got held up in some supply of boiler components that really held back their business sort of late last year and sorry, the previous year and into the beginning of 2023. And I think that investors have been a bit anxious about it. They probably didn't realize it had so much boiler components in its makeup, and that was held them back. And of course, the company itself, you know, it does have a certain amount of debt. They have got some deferred considerations. So I think, you know, from that point of view, it doesn't have net cash. It would be lovely if it did have net cash. It doesn't have net cash. The key reason why we like it is it, you know, compared with some of the other competitors, is we think, again, it delivers not good but outstanding levels of service. And you know, when you've got an uncertain customer base, which can go to different people, when the supply of products is much more sort of, you know, universal as it is now compared to 2 years ago when there was less supply, then ultimately customer service we think is really going to count. So, yes, you know, it's generating surplus cash. It'll generate more cash in the year just started, and it could generate even more cash in the year after, despite the deferred consideration. So, effectively, I think that it's a great recovery stock, to be honest. It's a sector which is perhaps a bit mixed in terms of trading conditions, but providing they can hold on to sales and grow their sales nicely, then I think the share price could recover really quite nicely from here.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just highlight to investors, the shares are about 42-43p, and the three brokers out there, you've got Stifel on 95p, you've got Cavendish on 106, and you've got Berenberg on 105, which was really just reflecting that valuation as mismatch, mispricing, isn't it?
Yeah, as I say, you know, I think, as I say, the boiler components, I think, really held them back in terms of share price. Market's been, as you know, very very difficult for small companies, and the share price has fallen considerably.
Yeah, no, should do. And it's very cash generative. Right, then let's move on to telecoms and technology. We've got Concurrent Tech, which does sort of like, I think, rugged sort of like IT, in, you know, in chips and different systems, computer boards and this sort of stuff for really things like the military, for, you know, defense, hard industrial applications, this sort of stuff. And I'm guessing, it seems to be doing really, really well. Like, does it compete against the likes of Solid State or I mean,
it does, but I think it's actually got a very strong market position. You know, it's really you know, before they bring new products to market, people like Intel and stuff, they speak to some of their closest confidants about what they're bringing to give them a roadmap, and actually Concurrent is one of those, and that's because it's actually in the defense industry, and a lot of the products they bring are going to be used in the defense industry, and of course the defense industry wants to know what's coming, so it has a very strong market position. I think the previous chairman, actually, who'd been with the company for nearly 20 years, really built a brilliant foundation. But if anything, the momentum, there wasn't much momentum in the business. I think the new CEO, Miles, has really injected more enthusiasm and opportunity and vibrancy into the business. He's brought in a new CFO as well. And I think the combination of both of those is really injecting more pace into product launches, into customer relationships. And there aren't that many companies, especially small caps, which actually are involved in the defense industry, which is going to likely, in our view, to have quite a lot of investment going forward. So I think it's really well positioned. It's nice to see the share price coming up. It's still only a 68 million market cap, tiny. It's got some net cash, but most particularly, it's got real momentum. And I think there's real opportunity with the quality of its market position to grow considerably in the next 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. Well, particularly as all the new sort of technology gets developed, like, you know, AI or something, you want to then put it into industrial applications and certainly into the defense that it's reliable. And if it has a big sort of like, you know, mission critical exercise, or there's a big, you want it to still perform to its, you know, to its requirements. And you're right, there's huge barriers to entry into that, because you can't just rock up to BAE Systems and say, actually, I've got an embedded board, because, you know, do you fancy buying it? I mean, it just doesn't happen, does it?
It really doesn't, though. I mean, all that pre-qualification stuff and obviously the confidentiality and the, you know, the fact that you have your staff who have been pre-approved and all the rest of it, it's a really tough industry to get a significant position in. And I think, as I say, I think Concurrent, I think it's got all the right foundations. And I think now on top, I think Mars is building a really strong business on top of it.
Yeah, good. Another one which has really sort of taken off is Endo InsurTech, which does the sort of like the LeapBot sort of unit, which helps insurance companies sell that service into homeowners to detect whether they've got a water leak, and they put it onto, I think, their sort of like, you know, the stock cop type sort of stuff, and it senses the cold water coming in. If there's a leak, there's more cold coming in, and it reduces the temperature,
right. Yeah,
and therefore sends a trigger to the homeowner, hang it, you've got a leak here. And surprisingly, it is patented, which is great. What's your sort of latest on this one? Because it really does seem to be being adopted not only in the UK but also increasingly abroad.
That's right. I mean, the amazing thing is it's actually quite a low cost product, so you can just put it on. There's no, you know, you don't need an electrician or a plumber or whatever. You just put on your in pipe and etc. So that's the good thing. The second thing is it actually saves insurance companies quite a lot of money, and that's the rollout. It's not so much people just say, I don't want the hassle of preparing my roof if I've got a leak in the roof. It's actually that the insurance companies don't want the hassle of having to pay you for it. So from that point of view, they detect them really early, which is brilliant. And so we have seen this rollout and client adoption. It's been particularly in Denmark, more recently Sweden, UK, as you mentioned, even the US. They've got Pure Insurance, a couple of others. Most recently, of course, they've got the Nationwide, which is one of the top 10 US insurance companies, which have just signed up. And so the momentum is pretty strong. And again, you know, this has come from a very small market cap. It is 24 market cap, million market cap now. So there is a bit of expectation about the opportunity. But really, as I said at the start, the main thing is actually it's not just the upside. It's the when you get the momentum, the option value on these things can be very considerable. And this is the one which we supported at launch. You know, share price drifted off with a small cap market to start with. But now it's getting that momentum coming through. Share price definitely pushing on. And we've been really pleased with the progress of this business.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. And it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I know it's and this comes to optionality when you go to sort of early stage companies. Because if I was the government or a water company, and obviously want to, you know, save water in terms of, okay, we haven't got to do it so much in the UK at the moment because we've had floods everywhere, but in Europe in particular, when they've had drought, the last thing they want is wasting water.
Absolutely. That's leaks. Another very good point, yeah.
So if the local government decided to mandate the use of leak box for every new build house, as they've done with sort of like smart meters or smart watering, this would just take off, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And actually, there are quite a lot of areas where you want to build houses, where there's you know, land allocated to building houses and such like, and they can't because they haven't got the water supply.
Yeah.
So again, if you can save on the leaks in the local area, then of course, as a second effect, you can actually build more flats and houses for local people.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to another one, which is a real play on India, because as investors probably know, it's been really booming, that sort of country under President Modi, and they've been doing a sort of like a decade-long digitization program in terms of bringing rural broadband out into sort of like the different regions and like for payments and bank accounts. And one company, which I hadn't really appreciated, is a real beneficiary of this, Cyan Connode, which you've talked about before and have in the portfolio. Yeah. And it's just been winning literally millions and millions of rolling out its sort of like radio frequency mesh networks in smart meters in rural broadband locations. Give us your latest on this one, because it's it seems like a really smart play. If you want an emerging market, booming market, this is the way. This is a perfect. This is 100% in there.
But absolutely right. And you know, if anything, since I last spoke to you, I think the share price probably drifted down. So
yeah.
It's not, and that's not because actually it's not successful. It hasn't got a great prospects. Specifically, it hasn't announced the mega contracts as yet. So we're talking really about 29 million market cap here. A company which has 25% market share in Indian smart meters. And that's not just obviously the meters. You've got to have the relationships with the utilities who install them and maintain them and all those kind of things. And as you say, Modi's got this enormous billions to be invested on this rollout program. So they are literally, investing at the moment to generate tenders, which are hopefully going to give them very considerable flows. That they haven't arrived. Perhaps it's a bit slower than we might have expected. Does that matter? Not over sort of, you know, the life of the company. The company's ready to go. They've raised a little bit of money recently, which may have helped the share price. But most particularly, that the market could be very considerable, you know, coming back to you, Group, as they move into profit, as they move into generating substantial cash flow. You know, this is the kind of company where you could see the option value being considerably higher. And that's, you know, and we're right, you know, we're quite close to those contracts, in my view. We don't know when we're going to get the contracts, but they don't seem very far. So it is just a wonderfully, you know, it's all that investment. We love companies which have been investing for a long period. They don't need to invest so much going forward, and they get the cash payback. And often the cash payback on all the previous investment is substantial, and perhaps the capex doesn't need to go up much. And the net effect is you get this enormous surge of surplus cash. And that's really what drives share prices, gives the board a huge number of options in terms of investing in the business, expanding at a faster rate, you know, obviously perhaps, you know, returning capital to shareholders or giving dividends. So the net effect is that we're in a, yeah, we're, as you can see, we're tremendously upbeat about signing Canoe from here.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, you know, they're very still early in this transition, because I think Modi's government has signified that they're going to be, or indicated that they're going to deploy 250 million smart meters in rural broadband, in rural in India. And if they have 25% of that, and they've only currently got an order book of 6 million, I mean, there's a long way to go, isn't there?
Well, exactly. Even if they get 10% of it, I mean, yes, I'd love to get 5, right? They're still a complete winner from here. So the net effect is, it's not just India, of course. They do have a Middle Eastern operation. They've sold into some into Africa as well. So there are other opportunities too. But most people are concentrating on the Indian contracts, because they could be so big and they appear very, you know, very close.
Yeah. Another one in the one in the software sector is Smart Tech 247, which I think listed in December 2022, and not many people have, it's been under the radar, not many people know it. I mean, I hadn't really sort of heard it. It's in cybersecurity with sort of AI enhancing. Can you give us your latest on this one, and what's the sort of, because it's actually slightly down, I think, on its IPO listed.
Yeah, price. I mean, to be fair, it hasn't disappointed. So you know, this does this doing just fine. It's got the opportunity, so I'm just going to turn off this incoming phone call.
Yeah, sure.
So it's got the Vision X platform. And the reason why we're confident about its future is it's got some very established customers. So specifically, it's got a global pharmaceutical, which has just extended its contract for another 3 years. So it's not just as though it was good a year or two ago. It's still right up there. So it's got quite a decent customer base. They've just done a deal with Splunk, who aren't, I don't know, particularly well. But it is a very large US corporation in this area, so 25 billion US corporations. So again, they're using their technology, their Vision X. So it's got established customer base. It's got new customers coming through. It's only 30 million market cap, and that opportunity, when they get the customer base, when they get access to the customer base, you know, could lead to not just sales growth, but rapid sales growth. So we're pretty, again, you know, it's been fairly quiet for the last 12 months. Most small cap share prices have been a bit drifty in the last 12 months. Yes, it came to market, it's been a bit drifty. But most particularly, it's got that opportunity, again, customers, I think, delivering a very high quality product. And we think the combination, you know, gives the option value, which could be very considerable from here.
Yeah. Do you know what the specific sort of USPs are of the company? Because obviously it's a big tailwind in all things cyber security. It's just difficult for a layman, in fact, probably for most investors, to sort of differentiate between sort of a Palo Alto or obviously Smart Tech 247.
I mean, they do talk quite a lot technical about the Vision X platform, but specifically in terms of the value add, we just look at the customers to see if they value the value add.
Yeah, okay.
And so from the, you know, when you get companies like Splunk, you know, to be honest, Splunk could do deals with anyone. Why would they choose Smart Tech 24/7? Because they've got something which is very differentiated. So they're very innovative, I think, in the way that they've come in. They've been quite early in certain parts of the market, and I think that's given them a real advantage.
Good. Okay. Now, one Trufin, which is basically a... it's a bit of a sort of like a potential unbundling play in the software. It's got sort of a software that does sort of helps early payments and also does factoring for the Sartago with the likes of Lloyds, etc. And also has it's placed at. The shares have drifted actually since we last spoke, about 45p at the moment. What's your latest on this one? And do you see unbundling opportunities here?
Yeah, I mean, what I like about this company is, you know, the management team. You know, they take on businesses which have often, you know, fallen back for whatever reason. They often buy them from a receiver for perhaps a pound, and then they turn them around. Not only do they bring them up, you know, into businesses again, but then they put them into a position where they can then expand rapidly with a partner. Mm-hmm. And of course, Sartago, the financial business, is the lead business in this in this company. You know, it's a factoring business. You know, it does some factoring, but most particularly when they went to see Lloyds, it wasn't so much the Lloyds Bank were interested in, in sort of, you know, replacing their software. But most particularly, they wanted an overview which gave them a risk matrix of what was going on in their businesses. And as they started to work towards using the Satargo software, they realized that actually, what's the point of just having the ROS framework if you can do all of everything else in a standard package of software? So Lloyd's Bank, you know, the very large company.
Yeah, yeah.
And here's a technology platform being verified by a very large customer.
Yeah.
And other banks could come in as well. So coming back to it, you know, it is only, you know, 50 million market cap. You know, it is going to be, you know, looking after a crucial part of the Lloyd's bank operations. It has net cash. Clearly, you've got Playtech and a few other divisions as well. But specifically, you know, I think putting that cash in for that kind of cash payback, great, it's Lloyd's, as the Lloyd's rollout will drive growth and cash generation going forward. But of course, as I say, other banks potentially will come in. And that will then put the business in a completely different opportunity set. And again, as you see, the share prices, you know, really what's been a feature really in the last 12 months is how much many companies which are doing perfectly well, don't need any cash, it's got their cash at the moment, which have seen their share prices drifting. It's been very disappointing for the management teams as well as, of course, our clients.
Yeah. Okay, well, the last one on the software side, again, another one off the beaten track is Ingenta, which basically does publishing software for sort of like... and royalty software for publishers, essentially, also sort of trade. It's going into music and gaming and media markets and stuff. I don't know much about it, but it's an interesting sector that I know the likes of Spotify and YouTube. You have sort of like a lot of fragmented royalties now because NFTs and also you get, you know, basically one author and then it gets pushed around. So what's your latest on this one? It should be quite a good spot, actually.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting about this business is it's actually, you know, there's an awful lot of investment, obviously, the software, etc. About 80% of its revenues are just reoccurring most years. So it's a very stable business. It generates profits. It's got cash. Its market cap's quite small, so it's not well recognized. It's had a good, strong start to the current year, according to this recent news flow and further contract news. So specifically, it's just gradually expanding its marketplace, as you say, expanding its range of customers. And what's quite attractive is, you know, this whole issue about rights and collecting rights is getting complicated, and their software does a good job for that. So they've got, again, from our point of view, why are we involved? It's a tiny company, but the point is the customer base. When you look at the customer base, you look at the outcome for the customers, the way that they've been signing up more contracts going forward, ultimately gives us the opportunity. This company will not just generate cash, but it'll generate more cash. And as it becomes recognized, of course, not just will its share price rise, but ultimately small companies like this, they'll then be able to acquire assets potentially from distressed sellers. You know, if we do get a recession, if we do find that some companies are over leveraged or some of the private equity companies fail, you may be able to buy those from receivership for small amounts of money. You need to put working capital in, but sometimes they can be transformational to the prospects of the quoted companies. And I think this is very much overlooked. It's not just the opportunities from the current opportunities of the, you know, business, but most particularly the opportunity for acquisitions at distress value to deliver substantial upside. And that's really not just, you know, small caps will grow when the world can't grow, but actually sometimes they can deliver transformational returns when the world doesn't grow. I'm tremendously upbeat for that reason.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would agree because... I mean, even if you look at the valuation after the sort of like the recent lift, it's still only 2x sales and less than 14x PE, which for a 80% recurring revenue software company is actually pretty cheap.
Net cash as well. Yeah, again, not lots of net cash, but again, it just gives you reassurance. They're not going to come back with an emergency rights issue, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, let's move on to sort of like counter-cyclical financials, if there is ever any of them, but these ones are. We've got CMC, which is a CFD spread better, and it came out with a good bullish trading update last week. And I think it's 59% owned by, Peter Crudders, isn't it? Lord Peter Crudders, And it seems to be more volatility in the markets. It's going to do well, I guess, more people trade.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it had a golden period back in, 2020 when we had the pandemic. A lot more people were trading. It was trading well. It's got a tremendously good platform. I think the way it trades, I think, is very well seasoned. They've got I like the customer base they've got. I like the sales they get. Clearly, you know, profits have come down more recently. But most particularly, here's a company, again, it's pre-75 million market cap. over 200 million of cash in the balance sheet.
Yeah.
Again, very, very solid. But what's probably not being picked up by most investors, or they're not that interested in, is actually the opportunity for insurance companies and such like to move to offer product direct to consumer is much greater than people think. So they've been building a platform. It's kind of, when you deal with sort of AJ Bell, or if you deal with Hargreaves and such like, that they have their RFP process and you can deal, but it's a little bit clunky. The great advantage of the CMC platform as they build it is it's just straight through processing. So you get live prices, you can deal directly. And that's, I think, going to be taking market share. But most particularly, I think as they sign up insurance companies and others, I think that's brilliant. And then on the top of that, as you mentioned, the actual trading is just not correlated to the economic cycle. If we do get a period of high volatility, and I know it may have felt like a very good year in terms of the Magnificent Seven, but if you look at market volatility measures, they were extraordinarily low at the end of last year. So we haven't had that much volatility. That's held back volatility in terms of their customer base. But again, what I love about these kind of companies is when they succeed, they don't just succeed, but they succeed in a very substantial size. And this company pays loads of dividends along the way. So I think it's a great, it's terrific to have it within the portfolio. One, because, we don't know whether there'll be a recession. So it's not that connected to the economic cycle. But secondly, it can just have blowout years unexpectedly. And again, lovely for the portfolio to have these kind of things in there with option value on the upside.
Yeah, as you say, it's got absolutely enormous balance sheet in terms of cash.
Absolutely.
Rock solid.
And the quality of the business. I mean, when you go there, when you look at the operations, the way they manage risk and things, I'm just horribly impressed by that.
Yeah, good. Another one in that sort of sector, which is actually even cheaper and pays even more richer dividends, is TP ICAP. It's about £1.4 billion business, 7% dividend yield. And the shares just keep ticking up, gradually. And they're really not expensive. They're on a PE of six, actually, or 6.5. So, what's your latest on this one? Because again, I mean, I think it's big into interest rate derivatives. So obviously, interest rates have been going up and down like a yo-yo in the last sort of 18 months. Plus, I think it's got a bit of an unbundling play with its Parameta Solutions as data side. But what's your latest on this one?
So the market cap, I mean, compared with all the others, this is large. This is 1.54 billion, right? So first of all, but because it's complicated financial, and because quite a lot of mainstream fund managers can buy lots of quite large financials with good yields and such like, I don't think it gets the visibility it should, and that's why it's in our small cap portfolio. We don't usually pick out these kind of companies because they're not cheap enough usually. But this company, as you say, is very lowly valued. Specifically, that Parameta business, I mean, theoretically, they could spin it out of the business. I was looking at a Peel Hunt note recently, which suggested that it might be worth 950 million. And that's they considered to be a conservative estimate. It could be worth a lot more than that. Well, when you start off with 1.4 billion, you can sell half a business for a short billion. Obviously, you can see the upside potential. And the liquid net potentially was probably made, an acquisition made just before we had the downturn with the pandemic. And that probably did work against it. But I think it's a terrific acquisition over time. Yeah. And it's not so much just that it gives more operational efficiency for dealing in equities for mainstream institutions. But they're widening it so you can deal in the bond market. And ultimately, liquidity in the bond market, we worry about small cap liquidity in equities, but in the bond market, it's much, much more difficult because they have all these little narrow tranches of different things. And finding somebody who wants to buy that particular tranche at that particular moment can be really difficult. So if they are able to generate more liquidity in bond markets, my view is it's tremendously valuable. Not valuable, tremendously valuable. Yeah. And this company, I think, is sitting on that kind of winning hand. It isn't very obvious at the moment. They haven't got, the pull through. A couple of the big banks in the US have signed up as market makers to their product, but they've got need probably another couple to go. And actually, then they need to get the liquid net operational within the institutions, but they've already got all those relationships for the equity. So it's just a matter of passing it across to some of their bond trading. So the net effect is, it's below the horizon in terms of what it's doing. But the upside, and again, the option value, the customer service, all of those kind of things which tick our box, strong balance sheet, ultimately come through. And therefore, even though it's a £1.4 billion company, I think it's got the option upside of some of the small caps we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, if you actually compare it to somebody like the London Stock Exchange, which is on about a 30, 35 times PE, And the reason for that is it basically sells its data from all its transactions. Well, this one is the biggest interdealer broker, I think, in the world. And it's collecting all OTC data. And it's just saying bonds in large blocks and in small caps and or interest rates. I mean, that data,
I absolutely agree. Yeah.
That mining that data is just, it's 7 times PE. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But
I think there are companies around like this, which perhaps, you know, it would have been nice if the Liquidnet's acquisition had come right even quicker. But, you know, we did have a pandemic and other things along the way, and the bond yields, of course, you know. So from the point of view, should we be that worried if it takes a bit longer? Not really. If there's still a big prize at the end of the rainbow, let's just, you know, have a bit of patience here, you know.
Another one which is exactly falls into that, with sort of like another one at the end of the rainbow that has got significant upside and has done really well recently is Avacta. And I know we've talked about this one before, but it's been sort of like, you know, finishing off its phase one trial for its AVA6000, which is the pro-doxorubicin drug. I think it did 7 cohorts at increasing levels of chemotherapy in there. And it came out with very good safety data, but also showed some efficacy data in terms of shrinkage of tumours and actually depositing the chemo actually onto the hard tumour. Can you give us your latest view on this one? Because I mean, they knocked the ball out of the park in phase one. I think they're going into phase two for next year.
That's right. That was a phase 1A study, and then we'll do a phase 1B. So they're both safety studies. So they weren't really primarily aimed to pick up the efficacy. They were basically just showing the safety data. And what was thrilling about the safety data was they just had to keep using more and more, stronger mixes. Yeah. To see if they could actually find any, problems with toxicity. And there was a little tiny bit of toxicity, but it's like, compared with doxorubicin in the normal state, it was just nothing. Yeah. And so the net effect has actually been that its technology has been really, you know, reinforced and verified with these tests today. That's the AVA 6000, as they call it, doxorubicin. There's opportunities for them to do something similar with AVA 3996, which is another product which is in the chemotherapy. But again, you know, we'll find out more data. They're going to make a big presentation on that in April at the American meeting of the relevant meeting. But specifically, it's kind of really proven, taking a giant step forward in terms of its technology, which is wonderful. But alongside, clearly, you know, they do have a diagnostic division. It was, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, it would have been lovely if they had flow tests, which had been adopted by the UK government. They weren't. But that business has been built up. It could be in due course that they use some of that as actually helps the funding of the business. That would give them more funding if they sold that business. We don't know they're going to sell it, but they could sell it. And the other features, they've got other joint ventures, things like Aficel, which they can sell. So the net effect here is company of 300 million. It's just under 300 million. You know, as I say, very strong technology. We like it. We have taken some profits over the years. To be honest, we loved it. You know, originally got it. Very, very low level, but specifically, you know, we think that the technology is really well established now, they could go to the next stage. I think particularly, you know, 6000 is one you've just given the data on. I think 3996 actually may have even greater upside potential when that comes with the partners going forward. We do sometimes complain we don't have, you know, technology stocks, big technology stocks in the UK, but we really build them from the bottom upwards, and this is an example of one of those.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And in fact, one of the big merchant banks at the start of the year was looking at the healthcare outlook and said the two key drivers for growth were obviously, first and foremost, was the GLP-1 drugs, which is the weight loss sort of stuff. But we know about all that.
Yeah.
The second one was smart chemo.
Absolutely.
To tie in with sort of like immunotherapy, but also the precision platform. And they were just talking of like, you know, huge potential addressable market there to be able to use chemotherapy treatments where they haven't been able to be utilized before.
Well, the truth is that, you know, you can have chemotherapy, but unfortunately you can only have a limited number of cycles because the toxicity on the rest of your body is so high that you can't take that many cycles. With these kinds of products where they're much less toxic, you can then go through many more cycles. Not only does that give you a much better quality of life, but it obviously extends your life expectancy considerably. And who knows what might have in the long-term effect of these things. But it's great to see that these kind of products are coming through. You know, this was developed in Leeds University, so it's not a sort of Oxford or Cambridge type product. It's great to see these technologies getting funded and getting to a period where they're actually working in humans and making a difference to people's lives.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, well, let's move on into another one in the healthcare sector with breakthrough sciences, Oxford Biodynamics, which is sort of like a, I think it's got an EpiSwitch 3D genomics platform that's come out with a new. No, sorry, it's come out with a new. I think it's a prostate cancer test, which is just blockbuster. Yeah. It's hugely more accurate than the existing one. I think the current standard of care is sort of mid-50s, and I think theirs is around about 94% accurate, which could really change it into sort of like screening, I guess, for prostate cancer. But has also got, because it's a platform, has also got other products in sort of companion diagnostics for immunotherapy. Can you just take us through this one? Because I mean, I'd not really seen it before. It's still only 35 million market cap. I mean, the market, it really isn't giving it much value at the moment, which doesn't seem to be right.
No, it's interesting, really, because, I mean, the share price has actually, I mean, in contrast to quite a lot of other small companies in the last 12 months, the share price has actually been quite good. It's been double this level. Did touch 80 million market cap during the year. I have to announce that actually we did actually sell our whole thing when it went up. Not because it was a bad company. I love the technology. I think the company's got a strong market position. But when you've got a company which is going up and making heaps of money,
right-sizing it,
you've got other companies where they're going down, we can take. So don't get me wrong. I've not lost confidence in the business. I think the technology foundation has been becoming increasingly obvious and viable now. But most particularly, you know, this is a company where, again, share price shoots up. And because there's natural sellers in almost everything, we've seen the share price drift off again, even though it's not really justified.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I think, you know, you as the fund manager, you've got to decide about right-sizing positions, haven't they? Because when something shoots up, then it breaks your sort of like, you know, you're just unwritten rules about how big a portion you can have in one particular stock, doesn't it? So that's just
management. Part of the opportunity is to take profits on things which have gone up and reinvesting in the companies which have gone down, not because they've gone down, but if they've got the same kind of prospects we always thought they had, then they'll hopefully have even more upside because they've come down. So that's the opportunity, really. And I think, you know, when you look at many of the companies, you know, quoted companies out there, particularly less than 100 million market cap, you know, there are just so many opportunities. I mean, it's a lovely job to have to meet all these companies and try and pick out not just the ones which are best, but a great variety of different opportunities so that, you know, if there is a downturn in the housing market, it doesn't mean that the portfolio has a bad year sort of thing.
Mm. No, it makes total sense. Now, another one in that sort of healthcare, which looks just mispriced, is actually profitable. Medical devices producer or developer, Inspiration Healthcare CEO Neil Campbell. And it does sort of ICU sort of baby incubators for prenatal sort of well, basically ventilators and warmers, and I think it's about two-thirds of its business, and the other third is sort of infusion products that it does for sort of helping people taking in drugs and taking in food, etc. It seems to be going through a bit of a turnaround, solid balance sheet, trades less than 7.5 times forward PE, etc. So it's absolutely dirt cheap. And had an interest. He's trying to get approval out in the States for one of its sort of, you know, higher value sort of ICU prenatal ventilators out in the States and from the FDA for next year. Had a really quite strategic acquisition of a distributor and manufacturer of medical devices in Florida. Can you take us through your latest on this one? Because it does seem to be a bit of a one of those things which has got a good chart, bit of a following wind behind it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's terrific. It's not just about investing and making money for clients. We also want companies which actually make a difference to people's lives. And they, you know, it's nothing more urgent than if you're a preterm baby and you need a proper incubator.
Yes,
and they have, you know, they look after their customers so well. Coming back, you know, it's a cornerstone, a strong balance sheet again. Probably what probably hasn't been talked about a lot in the last couple of years is they've moved to new premises. I think that's tremendously upbeat. They've brought it all together. They can make more of the incubators. They can make them quicker and respond to customers quicker and all that kind of stuff. So again, share price gone down. The quality of the business is just there. Clearly, you know, volumes have come through. They got a bit of a boost during the COVID period and they've got a lesser boost now. But most particularly, the quality of the business is just terrific. And as you say, moving into the US, they've just made a US acquisition, quite a small acquisition called Avion, which is actually, if anything, it makes it easier for them to get into the US going forward. And again, that's terrific as well. So strong business, generating quite a lot of cash. The free cash flow yield at this kind of share price, according to brokers, is something like 12%.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, you don't usually come to businesses of this quality with this kind of balance sheet on these kind of valuations, you know, and so we have taken profits in the past. You know, I don't think we'll be taking profits at this level. It's a terrific company, you know. And so, if anything, you know, it's set for that rebound. As you say, the PE for the year just finished is 14, but the PE for the year just
And
started is
forward.
7.5. And most particularly, as I say, the upside with many of these companies is so much greater than most people think, not just because of the current opportunity to grow the business, but as I say, to expand the business and develop into areas which people haven't given enough credit for.
Yeah, it would almost be a shame, wouldn't it? It comes back to your M&A point. If somebody put a number on these and
Absolutely.
took it off, because even if you put 100% premium, which would be very attractive to existing shareholders, actually that'd still be only 14 times PE for a high value IPR rich medical devices firm. And you'd be scratching your head and thinking, oh, do I really want to take 100% premium?
Absolutely. Well, the answer is no, actually. But so you know, it'd be a real disappointment for the UK market and indeed for the company concerned to actually be acquired at 100% premium.
Okay. Right. Well, let's move on to the sort of consumer, which obviously has been had a bit of a revenge spending spree over the last sort of 2 years, particularly as it's went on to the holiday and traveling and all this sort of stuff. And one in that sector is Hostelworld, which is sort of like more students and people backpacking, I suppose. But it says have done really well. It still trades at a reasonable sort of like 15 times. What's your sort of your latest on this one? Because I suppose it comes down to the sustainability of that. Of the spending, but it isn't in that sort of the high sort of sort of like luxury hotel side.
Yes, as I say, the things which we love about companies is when they invest hard for a long period to generate a really strong position. This happens to be the Hostelworld website, which, you know, if you're going on hostel ho holidays, is one of the best, possibly the best in the world. But most particularly, you know, as it gets more traction, as people have come out of lockdown and they've gone on holidays, we are seeing now volumes increasing. It's reached the important moment where it's not costing cash, it's making net cash this coming year. It's meant to have net cash, perhaps according to brokers, something like 12 million at the end of the current year. So from that point of view, you've seen the acceleration of the business. Marketing costs as a percentage of sales are beginning to level off now. So we are actually getting into the cash payback. And that's why the valuation's come up. So share price has actually done pretty well. Again, comparison to many other small companies, it's outperformed considerably. It's now about 178 million market cap. But you know, it's kind of the, you know, it's a bit, it's not the hotels.com, it's not quite as kind of that larger market position, but it's got a really strong market position. Give it 2 or 3 years, and it'll continue to have, you know, dominate that sector. Customer service, particularly the way it links up people who are going to the same hostel, again, really very impressive stuff. And you know, it's you know, this is the kind of company we actually want quoted in London. It's just an outstanding business. And we just need more of these kind of companies to be recognized. It's a I'm glad its share price has gone up, but I do think it's completely still overlooked in the longer term.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if some it's a bit of a trophy asset in this whole area, Expedia, eBookers, or even what's Airbnb, somebody like that who wants to get into hostels, sort of like accommodation, that have all those links would be it would be a no-brainer, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Another one with a real sort of entrepreneurial spirit in it is Supreme, which does sort of like affordable batteries, lighting, but specifically vaping. And vaping's really sort of energized it, sort of like top line of late, generating lots of cash. And I mean, it still trades at, well, it trades at about 7 times PE, which I guess is probably a bit of a reflection of the overhang for the government doing a consultation on vaping. But it does, again, it just looks like a mispriced asset that will bounce in the fullness of time once that comes through. What's your latest anyway?
Well, I think what's interesting about Supreme again is it's a very commercially run business. You know, it puts capital in to generate surplus cash outflows. And it, you know, when I first met the company before it came to market, actually the vape product was only a small part of their business. Clearly, it's grown to a giant part of their business, and they're continuing. But you know, they're continuing to succeed in that area, and that's great. But most particularly, you know, it's continued to expand in other areas, you know. So now it's in vitamins. Most recently, it's made the acquisition of Food IQ, again, buying from a distressed seller at a very low entry price to improve their prospects. Again, what I love about the business is when it comes to vaping, they manufacture their own vapes, right? I know most of it's made in China, but they do their own filling of their lines and things. So the core business here is a business which generates lots of cash. It's got a free cash flow yield, attractive free cash flow yield. But most particularly, as that cash generates going forward, they can reinvest it in other businesses, often bought as I say, from distressed sellers at the wrong price and make even more cash flow. So you know, it's just, again, it has got a bit more recognition. It had a setback about a year and a half ago when some light bulbs, you know, people didn't replace their light bulbs. It's got a light bulb division, it's got a battery division. But most particularly, you know, it's the vapes and now this Food IQ, some of the products they've done with the vitamins. You know, I think what a forward moving management team. You know, I'm very impressed, not just by the management team, but you know, FD and such like. I think these are just the kind of companies, literally, you could just hopefully have them in your portfolio on a long-term basis, and you'll be surprised by how much, you know, their share prices rise over a longer-term period.
Yeah, and even if you know, sort of like you have to wait a bit longer, you've got sort of like a really good dividend yield and a cash generator, the valuation.
Absolutely. You know, if there's a recession or whatever, are we going to, you know, cut our consumption of apes? Not a lot.
No. Yeah, exactly.
It's a very resilient company.
Yeah, good. Okay, well, let's move to oil and gas. We've got two here to talk to. i3 Energy, first of all, it sort of like is an explorer in Western Canada, I believe, and it's producing as well as sort of exploring. What's sort of your latest on this one? Because it's pretty, I think it's pretty cheap, actually, isn't it? Or something, if I remember.
Yeah, well, the share price, I mean, I think I wouldn't say it was an explorer. Clearly, it does, you know, new wells, it's mainly gas, it does some oil as well. It's in Canada.
Yeah.
So, as you know, the gas price and oil price have been coming off a bit. So, from that point of view. But I mean, you know, again, looking back, you know, the real upside came when they raised money at 5p back in 2020. It was a 40 million market cap at that stage.
Yeah.
And as the energy price went up, particularly during the Ukrainian invasion, its share price rose to, you know, over 27p. You know, it got to nearly 30p. So you know, there's something which went up literally sixfold. Okay, it was a 300 million market cap at that stage. It's, you know, oil prices come down, there's been sellers, it's down to about 120 million market cap now. But again, generating surplus cash, NAV of probably 30p according to the brokers. It did grow the yield considerably. It's cut it back a little bit, but it's still yielding around a 12% yield at this level if it maintains it going forward. So what's interesting about these kind of companies is I think people feel a bit uncomfortable about energy stocks. They feel a bit uncomfortable about commodity stocks because nobody quite knows what the energy price is going to be next year. But within the context of a portfolio, when you've got all sorts of unknown risks, you just want things which are less correlated, and the energy sector is less correlated. This is onshore. So being onshore, it's relatively at lower energy in terms of drilling new wells. You can bring new gas. And I think, you know, we do need to phase out gas. And the whole, I'm kind of very interested myself in terms of green, and you know, I didn't have a car for 30 years, and I've restricted my long distance flights and all that kind of thing as a feature of the last 30 years. So don't get me wrong, I don't think we shouldn't do something about climate change, but I think we've got to go through this transition at the moment. I think we're cutting off energy too quickly relative to the new energy we're creating, and so I do think that these kinds of companies still need to be funded for the next year, you know, 5 and 10 years before we get into that new period where actually carbon-based energy is less important.
Yeah, and I think also the shares were artificially hit, really, or has still have been, by the wildfires, weren't they, in Canada? Because I think it might have disrupted some of the production. And if you just temper it, that's temporary, because you know that's all sorted now. So they should have
Absolutely.
A good.
That is onshore, to be fair. That's right.
Yeah, they should have a good outlook going forward.
Well, and I think they can make more acquisitions of distressed, you know, relatively low cost wells, bring them in, generate the surplus cash. I mean, again, that's really what they did when they raised money at 5p, as I say, back in 2020.
Yeah. Another one in the North American oil and gas is Pantheon Resources, which has got sort of like a, I think it's more of a sort of like a working interest in huge deposits in Alaska, which is obviously one of the famous oil and gas areas. And what's the latest on this one? Because I don't think they're producing yet, but the idea is to sort of like gradually bring that on stream, isn't it, over the next 2 years, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, slightly bigger than some. It's 250 million market cap, well, 230 million market cap.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a reasonable size. But particularly, the problem with Alaska is, you know, clearly you're developing an area which is you know, environmentally very serene at the moment, and you really don't want to damage the environment. Mm. So it's really quite difficult to get permission to drill wells, and you can only really do it when there's a lot of freezing weather, because, you know, you don't sink into the mud and stuff. So coming back to it, the unusual feature about the Pantheon Resources Alaskan North Slope, you know, potential wells is that they're actually on the main road. And being on the main road, it means you actually can drill at all sorts of times of year. You don't have to wait for the areas when, so because obviously you're just drilling from something very close to the road. So coming onto that gives it the opportunity to expand at a much faster rate than many of us other competitors. It is on giant fields, you know, contingent reserves for Kodiak, which is their main reserve, is something like just under 1 billion barrels. So coming back to it, that's 2C. So you know, it's got 193,000 acres of development. You know, it raised money at 17p last year. You know, share price drifted off to 12. It's now nicely up, you know, over 20. So we've taken some profits again, but we bought more at 12 actually. But the point is, these are kinds of companies which, when you've got a whole portfolio, you want things which are less correlated, and you've got giant upside. Obviously not, you know, many people looking at it very closely because there's so many mainstream large oil companies which people can buy and overlooked. Versus the risk reward ratio, and that's why it's in the portfolio.
I did actually see the US government, the Biden one, just approved actually a big project in on that North Alaskan scope. I think it was with one of the big Conoco, I think it was
That's right.
ConocoPhillips.
All
So,
the big ones are there. This is obviously a tiny company, but it's got the same kind of upside the big ones have, you know.
You're right. The infrastructure's already in there, isn't it? So once you've put your, if you actually do, you know, get the oil, start getting the oil out, you haven't got to worry about transporting it
That's
to
right.
the south of the border. Okay,
That's it.
good.
That's
And now
it.
moving to decarbonisation and actually a play on India is Saiet. And I know we've talked about this one quite a few
We have.
times before. New CEO David Woolley. We've also got obviously the exec chairman, Tony Gott there as well. And it seems to have pretty strong demand still for its e-drives. It's got the supply chain sorted out with its local joint venture in Delhi, and now it really comes down to execution. What's sort of your outlook for Saiet for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I mean, the share price has been very disappointing. It's not just fallen, it's fallen considerably. And I think that really relates to the fact that actually it got probably overextended. You know, it's in a position where you know, it did this joint venture with CalMet, which in the US, which was fine. But most particularly, the Delhi factory, the joint venture is coming on now. Specifically, the actual flux motors always arriving. They've got 40,000 units already in place now for the actual flux motors with the joint venture, and they've got radial flux motors as well. So coming on from that, it's great actually. I think we're in a great position for this business just to get on with its core operations. It's proven its technology. It's got proven customers who want its technology. I think going forward, I think we're going to have an opportunity to actually really add considerable value over time. Unfortunately, the share price has drifted downhill at the moment. I'm going to have to go in a minute because I know a customer's trying to see me. Actually, I've got a customer meeting about now, so
Okay, right. Well, we'll call it
I
a
may have
day
to kind of
then.
terminate it there.
No,
But
we'll
I'm
call it a
sorry.
day. Well, thanks very much for your time, Gervais, and very much look forward. Well, before we, how do people invest in Premier Miton? Does it just go on your website?
Yeah, we've got a website. I mean, you probably need a fund supermarket if you want to buy the funds. But I think, you know, sort of from where we started, you know, the mainstream index funds have done brilliantly, and they could do it a little bit further. I think going forward, I think the world's going to change. I think, you know, markets could kind of flatline for 10 or 20 years. We just don't know. And if they do, you're going to need active funds. Small caps will be the way forward. I am tremendously upbeat for the
Brilliant.
opportunity, the sector to go forward from here.
Brilliant. A good positive note to finish on. So thanks very much, Gervais, and look forward in touch with base in 6 months' time.
Thank you so much, Paul. Thanks for setting that up.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.